in Lebanon right now.
And how the government now, which we are also not getting much information about, how it is dealing and the situation with Hezbollah in Lebanon?
You know, it's a confrontation that divides the country pretty much evenly. But what makes it so combustible in some ways is that it cuts across questions of sect, of ideology, of the conflict with Israel. On one side, you have the government that is nominally supported by the Sunni sect in the country. Of course, you have Hezbollah, the superpower among the Shiite community here. So what's so dangerous about this conflict in some ways, it's not just a government opposition conflict. It's a conflict that could quickly turn sectarian, that could turn violent. It's deeply ideological as well. What we have is Hezbollah fearing the indictments that may be handed down by an international tribunal naming its members in the assassination of a former prime minister. That former prime minister, his son, is now the caretaker prime minister, was head of the government that fell last week. So what we're dealing with almost is a waiting period, waiting what's going to happen. If we can see regional mediation, perhaps reach some kind of solution, that's not all that likely. If it doesn't, we have a stalemate. And in past experience in Lebanon, that stalemate's only broken through confrontation and violence.
Anthony Shadid, I want to thank you for being with us, foreign correspondent for The New York Times. Also, Juan Cole, speaking to us from the University of Michigan. Thank you for joining us. And I want to thank all the folks here at Democracy Now! Democracy Now! Produced by Shufadul Kaddous, Mike Burke, Aaron Mate, Steve Martinez, Nicole Salazar, Hani Massoud, Robbie Caron, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Nick Gillick, Hugh Grant. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, this is Ahmed Ali with your concert billboard for the week ending September 19th. Wednesday the 15th, we have Camelot Leaves, Eyes, and Blackguard at Irving Plaza. Taylor Hicks is at the Bolton Center on Friday the 17th. The Mudcats are at the Jamesport Vineyard at 1 p.m. on Saturday. Also on Saturday, we have Ahmed Ali, yours truly, at the Lobster Roll at 3 o'clock. And CEG presents On the Rocks Off Cruise Aboard the Half Moon with Zach Deputy. That's 7 p.m. departure. I'm sorry, 7 p.m. board and 8 p.m. departure. And Sunday at the University Cafe, the Acoustic Strobes will be there at 7 p.m. Do stay tuned to WUSB. And if you're a promoter or a club owner or a band and you want to get your show listed on the concert billboard, do go to Scene, S-C-E-N-E, at WUSB.FM. And send us your information. Once again, stay tuned to WUSB in Stony Brook.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. Time is 6:01. Time for Off the Wall. And good evening, everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, action-packed Tuesday evening for us here at the radio station. Abbreviated show tonight. We're on for only 45 minutes, actually, only 40 minutes from now. But we have lots to talk about. We're even going to try to take phone calls, although that gets kind of difficult because we have a basketball game coming on at 6:45, and sometimes we have the same wires that need to be used for different purposes. So we'll see if we can pull that off. But we do have a fair amount to go over, sort of a continuation of what we started last week. And, of course, Kyle is here as well.
Yes, yes. E, what's happening?
Oh, boy.
We have a lot.
Yeah, you saw the kind of stressful day I was having. Just running around, one thing breaking after another thing. And it's like someone's up there trying to figure out ways to make Emmanuel like have to go around the longest possible circuitous route to get something done.
Yes, it has been a trying day so far, but things are good, I think. And, you know, we've got a lot to talk about, and we made it. We're here. We're live. And
are we on the air? Is this thing working?
Is it?
I don't know. I'm not sure if anyone's out there.
Well, if it is, we look forward to maybe taking some calls tonight as best we can with the abbreviated show.
And, you know, we don't get enough mail. I just got to say, we don't get enough mail. I know people have things to say. Write to us. Have people forgotten how to write? otw@2600.com. Lots of people were trying to call the show last week, couldn't get through. I know
that
a lot of people
awesome.
Are angry. It was. It was great.
Really
had a bingo.
I was excited about that. We got great calls. That was awesome.
So maybe we can take some more tonight. We'll see. We'll see about that. Okay, let's launch into our various tirades. We were talking, of course, about Arizona last week and how what an amazing place it is. A beautiful climate and wonderful cities. Still a little bitter about Arizona Cardinals being taken from the St. Louis Cardinals and the Phoenix.
Well, no, I got to interrupt you. We were not talking about that in the least.
That wasn't what we were talking about. Why else would we be talking about Arizona? It's a wonderful place to retire.
We were talking about guns. We were talking about the shooting. We were talking about the craziness in this country, the obsession,
yes.
The escalation, how if your neighbor clips his lawn in the wrong way, you have to start carrying your gun on your hip while you mow the lawn, and then your wife has to carry a gun while she's putting the bulbs in for spring. And
you know, it's amazing. We were watching some international media. I know you're not supposed to do that, but we do it anyway. Because we've got the Canadian dish thing going, and we can see all sorts of what the rest of the world is saying. And I learned some things. I learned that for every 100 Americans, there are 90 guns. 90 per 100. That's almost 1-to-1. I guess it's 9 per 10 or something like that. That's how many guns there are in this country.
Yeah, and Yemen is next, right?
They have something like 44 per 100.
Yes.
And I think England is something like 4 or 8 or something ridiculous
per
like that.
Per 100.
And the murder rate, these are just indisputable facts. These are numbers. You can say they relate to each other or they don't relate to each other, although I honestly don't see how you can say they don't relate to each other somehow. It's really how much do they relate to each other, I think we can debate. But the murder rate in the United States is something like 44 times that of England. And we're not that different culturally. We're not that different in the way our history has put itself together. There are some cultures where you might say, oh, well, they're from that part of the world. They don't treat life the same way. They don't have the same values. But England, United States, it's pretty similar. So for there to be that dramatic a difference, 44 times, not the number of people, the rate, the percentage, it's got nothing to do with the amount of people. It's got to do with per however many, 100, 1,000, 44 times the murder rate we have here. And we have a gun rate 90 per 100. They have something like 8 per 100. These things have to tie together because you build a violent society, a society that's thinking all the time about defending yourself against your enemy and making enemies all over the place. You're going to have these things happen. There's just no question about that. This has got nothing to do with your right to bear arms or anything like that. It's got to do with a mental sickness.
Well, yeah, people constantly, they want to take the debate and tear it apart. People are, you know, debating right now over semantics and stuff like that. Well, I'm sure we'll get into that later. But, you know, they want to take the issue of gun control and turn it into, well, you're taking away rights. And as you're saying, the Second Amendment. And what I really think of is self-control.
Mm-hmm.
and really self-expression, how you handle stress and how you handle these situations, because life occurs and is occurring.
It does.
And I think, you know, how we deal with things and our maturity level and the kinds of ways we express ourselves and the outlets we have. You know, some people do incredible writing or incredible artistic expression when they're in stressful times. They create, they do things with adversity. And it's amazing. You're talking about international news. When we look at other cultures, the things that people can do with such little resources. And we have an abundance of a lot of stuff. And in that abundance is this technology and consumption of weaponry. And
obsession with weaponry is what we have.
Yeah, and I think the plethora of it, the abundance of it, the availability, the accessibility, means that we express ourselves in blood and in violence.
Unfortunately, it's true, and it's so unnecessary as well. These debates, these endless debates that we get into about Second Amendment rights and things like that. It's not relevant to what we're seeing happening around us, because it's gotten to the point of absurdity where people just carry arsenals of weapons on them, machine guns, things like that. Where does it end? Do we each have a right to our own nuclear bombs because we have the right to self-defense or whatever? It's a sickness. It's something that is hurting so many people, killing so many people. And I think the Founding Fathers would be the first to agree if they saw where this those few words have led some people. And the fault is on a lot of us, too, for allowing this to continue, for being so measured in our responses. Enough is enough. We're pissed off. We don't want to take it anymore. Except how do you come up against all these armed people that are angry? You know, what do you do about that? It's really kind of frightening and kind of crazy. I want to read you something that I saw on MSNBC.
Please do.
Arizona has become a national leader in the gun rights movement in recent years as the state enacted law after law to protect the people's right to bear arms nearly anywhere at any time. And, you think the shooting rampage that wounded Representative Gabriel Giffords and killed so many other people would have slowed that down, but no, it hasn't. You know, I guess in my naivete, I would have thought that maybe after such a horrific shooting, such a clear example of how law-abiding citizens, and yes, this guy was a law-abiding citizen who mowed down all these people. It's interesting to say, well, law-abiding citizens don't commit these crimes. And yeah, that's true. They don't until they do. They're law-abiding citizens until they snap, and then they commit these crimes. So, yeah, a law-abiding citizen is never going to commit a crime. That's a great little logic lock there that you have, because obviously that's not going to happen until they turn into a psychopath with weaponry at their disposal. And everybody has the ability to snap and to do something. Years ago, if you had a gun and you snapped, okay, you could fire off one, maybe two bullets before somebody tackled you or people ran away or ducked for cover. But now, with all this psychopathic nonsense that we've pushed through, where people seem to think they've got the right to have their own armies in their homes, there's no telling what kind of damage a kid, a senior citizen, just a normal person who's had enough can do in the course of a minute before he has to stop to reload. And if it was up to these people, he wouldn't have to stop to reload. He'd be able to keep going forever. It's just, don't they see this? It's got nothing to do with the right to bear arms. They still have the right to have their arms, but just not this this incredible firepower that can be used to kill so many people so quickly. Anyway, yes, say... in my naivete, I would have thought that some gun control legislation might have come out of this, but boy, was I wrong. Instead, bills are being put forward to bring more guns into the forefront. Arizona Republicans are pushing for new laws allowing college and university faculty members to be able to carry concealed weapons on campus. this actually was brought up after the Virginia Tech University shooting of 2007. Where someone else who should not have been able to legally buy a gun but did anyway. mow down a whole lot of students. And now the reaction to that is that, well, students should be able to carry guns so that they can protect themselves. But, you know, I think doing that, more people will lose it and start shooting their enemies or threats or whatever. Listen to how they deal with the critics. This is John Wentling, a leader of the Arizona Citizens Defense League, which is a gun owner's advocacy. Sorry, it's always been a tough word for me. A gun owner's advocacy group active in Washington, D.C. There are going to be some nervous Nellies, so to speak, but I think that it will be overcome. We still have an obligation to protect constitutional and civil rights. So basically, those people who are disturbed by the people around them walking around with death weapons constantly, well, we'll just be overcome. We'll just be ignored. We'll just be stepped over. Yeah, you know, somewhere in there, I think there's a violation of our constitutional rights, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't feel any safer when I'm walking around and someone has a weapon. It doesn't make me feel safe. And in fact, I think it's that attitude that breeds more weapons, because people feel they have to match the kind of tools that their peers have, such that they have a level playing field were there some conflict to ensue. You know, you carry a gun, you see someone with a gun, you start thinking, wow, well, they have one, maybe I should be carrying one. And then everybody's got guns. It's ridiculous.
It's gotten so crazy in Arizona. They've introduced bills that would bar landlords and homeowners groups from restricting the right to bear arms. So you can't make up rules anywhere saying that we don't want you to have guns in this particular location. Expanding a current law that allows gun owners to display a weapon in self-defense. Arizona became last year the third state that made it legal for adults to carry a concealed weapon without getting training and a background check. What is going through their minds here? A background check? Training? No, we don't need those things. Just carry your concealed weapon. How do you argue that? You know, words defy me here. I can't think of any particular defense for this at all. No
me
training.
Either. Me either. It's just something being stretched to further and further lunacy. I mean, it's a law that people want. They want more and more allegiance with the law. You know, it's like you give people an inch and they aren't responsible here with it. They got to run with it. You know, that you talk about carrying in retail outlets or on schools and stuff like that. It reminds me. I used to go to a pizza place that they also had a bar, and I would go to the bar. And I think this is very common in Washington State, where I'm from, is when you go to certain institutions, places to eat, restaurants, that kind of thing, they have signs displayed that you cannot have a firearm in that bar or in that restaurant. And I always feel very comfortable, you know, that I'm drinking, you know, maybe having something after a long day or you know, eating a little bit of food with some friends. And, you know, you see this sign displayed that says anyone that comes into this establishment, especially if they have a bar where people are consuming alcohol, you know, adults doing their thing. I always felt comfortable looking at that, like, you know, this is one place where someone would not come in with a gun. You know, it's not allowed there, whether you have a permit of any kind or not. So that's an interesting anecdote, because I guess they'd want to repeal that. They'd want to pull that back so that, you know, you can go into a bar and get completely wasted and have your gun at the ready for when you need to mow everyone down.
Well, in Arizona, yes, they in 2009, they made it legal to have guns in bars and restaurants. But the rule is they can't drink alcohol. I'm not sure how do you tell somebody with a concealed weapon not to drink alcohol? How do you even know they have a concealed weapon? You know, it's absurd.
It's when someone has a gun and it's on their side. You know, they're a responsible gun owner. Yeah, responsible meaning they haven't massacred anybody in your neighborhood yet. You know, I'm embellishing, but yeah, I mean, they're standing there. They're responsible. You don't feel safer, and you know they completely ignore it. Yeah, it's just normal. You know, I've got this on my hip, or I've got a holster in the back of my belt, and they just function normally, act like no big deal. But you wonder. Mm-hmm. As a non-gun owner, as someone who doesn't have one to carry, you wonder, you know, what can I say to this person? The mood changes. The
right.
atmosphere
you,
changes.
You
don't you feel
can't
as free.
Annoy them. You can't get into a big argument about politics or something with them. I mean, even if they're the most responsible person in the world, people can get emotional sometimes.
Even
when's the last time you got into a really emotional argument with somebody who is armed? I mean, it's just something you try to avoid.
Exactly. And even if it's your best friend.
They say an armed society is a polite society. I disagree. I say an armed society is a scared society, and you don't want to annoy the person that has the arms. I'd like to play a piece of music, actually. I found this on the internet, and well, listen to the words. The words are really kind of apropos to what's been going on here, and we'll come back and discuss it in just a moment. That's music from Cheryl Wheeler, If It Were Up to Me. And invariably, when I say I want to play a song like this on the radio, people say, well, you can't say that. You can't say, take away the guns. What are you, crazy? People will never go for that kind of thing. And I just find it incredible that we've allowed the debate to be framed this way by the right wing, so that when you say, take away the guns, in their minds and in our minds, we picture some kind of governmental Gestapo coming in and searching everybody's homes and removing all their weapons and taking away whatever Second Amendment rights they have left, et cetera, et cetera. That is not what's being said in this song. That's not what we've been saying. That's not what so many other people have been saying. Take away the guns. It means take away the guns from your brothers, from your sisters, from your children, from your parents, from people that have them, that are around you every single day, that are basically infesting your life with ugliness. Get them out of your lives. It's up to you as individuals, not the government, not authority figures, but us as citizens. Get them out of your community. Get them out of your schools. Get them out of the shopping centers and the churches and the golf courses and everywhere else where guns seem to be popping up these days. We're the only ones that can do this, because legislation obviously isn't going to go anywhere, but our mentality is something that we can certainly change. So yeah, take away the damn guns. Do it at home. Start there. Move up. And your circle of friends, don't hang out with people that embrace this kind of thing. And it's kind of from the ground up. That's where you make the change. So don't let the debate be framed by people who just make it seem like anyone who wants to take guns out of their lives is for some kind of fascist state where everything is controlled and regulated and people are watched over. That's not it at all. You know what I mean? It's annoying. It's annoying to not be able to say these things.
Yeah, but it's easier said than done.
Of course. Everything's easier said than done.
I mean, that's great. That sounds awesome. But, you know, when you have friends, when you have people in your life, when your father, has guns, and you know, when your people close to you have weapons, it's really hard. Again, the mood changes when weapons are in the room.
Mm-hmm.
When weapons are available, your spine seems to be up for a big challenge. You know, how do you bring that up with your friends who have a weapon out on the table in front of you or something like that?
Well, you don't bring it up issue? Then. You don't bring it up with a weapon on the table, and that's one of the reasons why something is wrong if you can't bring it up then. But at another point, maybe on the phone or maybe when the weapon's not there, you say, hey, that made me uncomfortable. That's something that I'd rather not be around. And if they are friends, if they're people who respect you, then they'll respond. They'll be honest with you. They'll respect your wishes. That's if we don't have that, what do we have? We can't communicate with the people around us.
Yeah, I think that's entirely possible. You know, it's just it's tough to approach that. I think it probably is very easy though. You know, maybe I'm making it tougher in my head than it ought to be. Mm. But getting past that and initiating that conversation, it takes a leap of faith. You know, you really have to trust yourself and trust your friends, you know, that they're actually good friends.
It's either that or you compromise yourself and you put yourself in a dangerous situation and negate your own feelings and ignore your own concerns and live in a world you don't want to live in.
Right.
We have the ability to change the world we live in. And the way to do that is by defining the people we hang out with, the things we like to do. And then if that works, then it spreads to other people, and
right.
more people do that. That's how you make change. It's not going to be legislated, but I mean, some of it does have to be. You have to put some kind of limitation on what people can have legally. Otherwise, it's just going to get completely out of control.
Right.
And you know, this is one of the reasons why you're seeing this personal arms race, because it got out of control, because people went mad buying weaponry. Well, now they have to buy more to counter the people they don't like that bought weaponry. And I've heard many people say who have guns that, I wouldn't have so many guns if other people didn't have so many guns. And it's a slippery slope that we're all sliding down. And it's unfortunate that we've come this far. And if we had had some logic from the start, we could have had the right to bear arms, however people want to define that, but also have a somewhat safe society. I mean, the Second Amendment existed when I was a kid, and we didn't have this madness. So what is the difference? What has changed?
Everybody, all the younger people, you know, and the people around you have guns, so you have to have a gun.
Right, but what made them get guns is what I'm saying. What made that happen? You know, our culture, our society, we slipped. We slipped down a really bad hill, and we're continuing to slide. We need to recognize that, because where does it go from here? How much of this can we possibly take?
All right, no, I agree with you. Yeah, I'm just being a bit of a devil's advocate, because
it is hard.
I mean, how do you bring that up? I mean, again, I understand what you're saying, and I agree. I think that, you know, you really do have to do it yourself, but you basically have to cut those people out of your life. Unless they respond, you know, immediately. You know, you'd have to say to your father, Dad,
it's like,
I'm uncomfortable with this weapon that you tend to have around the house. I have to live with you right now because mm-hmm. I'm 15 or I'm 17 and I'm living at home going to high school. I have to live here right now, but I don't want to because you have a weapon, Dad.
It's like any addiction, any dangerous substance. If you see somebody with a problem, and folks, this is a problem. Someone's obsessed with weaponry. It's an addiction. It should be treated as a substance abuse problem, I think, because, man, people just, they don't know when to let go. They just, everything becomes about weapons and about shooting things.
That's even better. What if they drink and abuse substances and they have guns?
Yeah.
Then, you know, you're 15, you're 17, whatever, you're living at home, going to high school, and this is just the norm. You live with this.
It's a very dangerous setting for kids. For also on the subject of kids, by the way, if you look up the song I just played by Cheryl Wheeler, if you look that up on YouTube, there's a video that goes along with that. And wow, some of the pictures at the end where she says, I take away the guns, you see pictures of these kids posing with automatic weaponry, semi-automatic machine guns, things like that, all kinds of guns.
Yeah.
It is so completely inappropriate.
It's a montage.
And sad to see kids embracing that kind of a thing. Really deadly weapons, obviously handling them in a very unsafe way, pointing them at their heads. all kinds of horrible things. Now, we as a society, we react so so harshly to any kind of sexual thing involving children. Well, why don't we react the same way to something at least as inappropriate, namely deadly weapons in the hands of kids? That's not something cute. That's not something that exercises any kind of responsibility. These are kids. And to give them that kind of firepower is insane and leads to all kinds of tragedies that we read about week after week.
It's lunacy.
It really is. Speaking of lunacy, the director of communications for Gun Owners of America, Eric Pratt, said his organization and others are preparing for a skirmish in Congress. These politicians need to remember that these rights aren't given to us by them. They come from God. They are God-given rights. They can't be infringed or limited in any way. Now, you know, I don't know what this says about God, but I don't think God has anything to do with guns, all right? I really don't. I don't think guns are in the Bible, or I don't think the fact that they point to God as the reason for carrying all their weapons, it tells me there's a screw or two loose, really.
I think what that person meant was beer.
Beer? It
comes, yes.
Where does beer enter into this?
Oh, no, wait, that was Benjamin Franklin.
Oh.
Beer.
I'm not following. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. All right. They come from beer? What?
No. Beer? Benjamin Franklin. It's a quotation by Benjamin Franklin.
What's the quotation?
Oh, sorry. Beer is proof that God loves us and wants us to be happy.
Benjamin Franklin said that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good for him. But, okay. You know, I trust Benjamin Franklin, but I don't think was big into guns.
It's a different article. It's a different person.
Whatever.
This guy's crazy, though. God-given right.
I don't know how to even address this. I really don't. But when you say something is a God-given right, can we say that walking around without having guns, that's a God-given right too? Why don't we say that?
That's what I'm saying. I think that's what we've come to the conclusion is that, you know, we ought to be able to walk around knowing that, you know, we're not going to have people in our vicinity with weapons, family, friends, strangers, whatever. Now, why isn't that our right?
He continues to say, I think after the November election, it's going to be very tough for Carolyn McCarthy. As you know, Carolyn McCarthy is a representative on Long Island, whose husband was killed on the Long Island Railroad shooting massacre, and her son was severely wounded. And she became an advocate for gun control, became elected to Congress. He says it's going to be very tough for Carolyn McCarthy and even the Peter Kings. Now, it's interesting. Peter King is somebody I've insulted many times in this program. I say he's not only an embarrassment to Congress, he's an embarrassment to Long Island and, in fact, the human race. I've said all kinds of horrible things about him. But then I read about this. I say, Peter King, really? Peter King is advocating for gun control. Is it possible that I could actually win some respect for Peter King? You know, it's hard for me to actually believe this. But if the guy is speaking sense on this issue, I'm willing to give him a second chance. And maybe he's not such a bonehead after all. But then I continued reading, and it turns out what Peter King is actually pushing, Representative Peter King, Republican of New York, he's proposing a bill that would outlaw having a firearm within 1,000 feet of a member of Congress. So, you know, it's only the member of Congress who gets protected, not the citizen. What about the rest of us, Peter King? Do we get a bill saying that we can walk around without a firearm 1,000 feet from us? You guys in Congress, you're the ones who make these laws and these bills and these dangerous situations lead to these massacres. If anything, there should be more guns in your vicinity than in ours because you're the ones who are voting for them.
Yeah, but and us the people though, we need access to these people, and we spoke to this last week.
Absolutely, yes.
We were talking about, you know, how this what's happening is that we're going to have less access to people in power, and you will only be able to make phone calls and send postcards or mail to your representatives, and you won't have that that access to speak your mind and to talk to them and to be a part of the glad handing and the political process.
And that is something that should be guaranteed to us. That is a God-given right, if there's any kind of a right to have access to your representatives, be able to talk to them, debate with them, that kind of thing. That's being taken away from us because of all the people walking around with guns and because of all the fear of that. It's total lunacy. But no, the only reason we're even talking about this now is because a member of Congress was involved. That's the only reason. And I'm sorry, I have every bit of sympathy for her. but she's no better than anybody else who's a victim of this kind of a thing. And we should be paying as much attention to all the other cases. There are so many of them that have happened that have been relegated to the back pages of the newspapers. No coverage whatsoever, no remembrance whatsoever, no presidential speeches, no 24-hour coverage on CNN. None of that. It doesn't matter unless you're an important person. Well, that's nonsense. That's nonsense. It should matter when it happens to so many people. When it does happen to so many people, that's indication of a real problem.
This is the kind of thing that you know. I was going to say no coverage at all is another attribute of this kind of stuff. When it happens to somebody in power, the whole country is up in arms about it. No pun intended. Mm-hmm. But when our friends and our family and people around us are involved in this kind of stuff with guns, we don't even think about it. We don't get any coverage about it at all. I don't know if you want to continue more about some of the stuff that's gone on for me personally.
Well, I mean, that's up to you. If you want to discuss some personal effects of this, by all means, it's good to get it out. And this it does indicate that this doesn't just affect people in the news. It affects people in real life, people that you know.
Yeah, well, I just want to speak really quickly. We talked a lot last week about guns and gun control, and we got some good calls about it. And I basically don't want to bring this up in any way to make it seem like we're inventing stuff to make this make our points more felt in any way. You know, I would otherwise keep this completely to myself, but I also think it's important to bring it up because a couple days after we were on the air on Tuesday, I got in communication with some people back home. And I have friends. I mean, I didn't bring up my personal life at all, but I have friends and family who are gun owners and people with guns. My uncle has been packing his own bullets since I can remember, and he's a big Second Amendment libertarian kind of guy. My father and other members of my circle are all gun owners and that sort of thing. And recently I've noticed a lot of, I think in the last couple of years with the economic climate and people sort of out on the streets kind of looking for things, trying to make ends meet, that kind of thing, there's been a lot of paranoia and a lot of insecurity. And I've noticed, some of my friends, different circles of friends, have been taking up guns here and there, I've noticed. And this actually has a little bit more to do with people that I've just met as like acquaintances. So I have friends that are gun owners, and they obviously hang out in similar circles, right? With other gun owners, I guess. I that's what I've found is that when you know someone that has a weapon, they tend to have other friends with weapons too. And that's what I meant by like the mood and the way it breeds more weapons. And I have a friend named Joe, and Joe, I met a couple years ago, actually around 2000, before I started my time in college. I met him, and he was living sort of on his own. He had just moved out, and he was a neighbor of mine. And basically, I went to school, and he actually signed up for the Army, and he did two 11-month tours in Iraq. And I'd recently seen him since the summer, between the summer and November, when I came back here and started going on our recent trip to Europe. Between then, I saw him actually right before I left in December, and I had seen him other times before that, and basically was just hanging out, and he had a gun as well, and he had a couple dogs and that kind of thing. My point is, I talked to my friend B, I'll say his name is B, and he informed me that that Joe killed himself last week. And I've been looking for stories about this. I can't really find much information about it, and that's the point of how relevant that is, because he was basically a member of our military. He fought, like I said, two 11-month tours, and And I had seen him in December. He was carrying his weapon with him and, hung out, pet his dogs, and had some decent conversations. And just this week, B told me that that he talked to Joe's girlfriend, and she said he wasn't sleeping very well, and he shot himself in the head.
That's horrible to hear. It's always horrible to hear something like that.
It was incredibly spooky. And it had me shook all weekend, and I really didn't know what we would be saying today. And so anyway, I just want to put that out there. Again, I can't find any stories about it. Obviously, it's very personal. I guess I would be the media in this case.
The thing that strikes me is that something like that likely was just something that happened in a split second, just a feeling of hopelessness, a feeling that there is nothing to look forward to, and then the easy access to a way to just solve that problem very quickly and decisively, which is completely wrong, of course. But there it was, right there. And I think that sort of speaks to the culture that we have, where within an arm's reach is such destruction.
Yeah.
We can just unleash all kinds of horrible things. And if it were just a little bit further removed, where it wasn't that easy, where you couldn't just press a button and have something like that happen. The same thing with this guy in Arizona. You know, if it hadn't been so easy for him, nobody can say this guy, meaning the guy in Arizona, has a screw loose. He shouldn't have access to weapons. You know, I think we all know people that we would be very uncomfortable around with weapons. Try telling that to them. Try telling that to anybody. Try keeping weapons out of their hands. You can't do it. It's impossible. You have to wait for them to do something. There are so many indications of this guy in particular scaring his classmates, saying, I think he's going to come in here with a gun. They were all afraid of this. They were all seeing it happen.
Right.
And there was nothing they could do. There's nothing anybody could do.
Right.
And the real tragedy is that it was so easy for him to get his hands on this, and that is the problem. I don't see how anybody can defend that kind of a thing. That's got nothing to do with the right to self-defense or anything like that. Unfortunately, we are out of time. The basketball game's about to begin. But let's please continue this discussion, and I invite our listeners to write to us, otw@2600.com. And Kyle, my sympathies for losing your friend in such a horrible way. And I just hope more people out there hear what we're saying and maybe think twice about some of the choices they're making. We'd like to hear from you. otw@2600.com. All right, we'll see you next time. Have a good night.
Good night.
All right, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to play this song a second time. Blame the CD player for that. This is a song I meant to play.
I was born with my papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Some of you would live through me, then lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from distant lands. Conquerors and concubines and conjurers from darker times. A betrayal and conspiracy, sacrilege and heresy. And I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Alright, I feel alright tonight. Hey.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Stony Brook Seawolves basketball. Women's basketball live from Pritchard Gym. Here's Jeff Bernstein.
Thanks a lot, Matt, and welcome to Stony Brook Seawolves women's basketball. My name is Jeff Bernstein. I'm joined by my broadcast partner, Sue Serafini. And tonight, the Stony Brook Seawolves take on the Albany Great Danes in the SUNY rivalry. And tonight, Seawolves looking for their first win in the America East Conference. And Sue, just want to touch base. Evelyn Thompson takes over as the interim head coach. Michelle Cherry stepped down the other day. So when a transition happens in midseason, all you can really ask for at this point is the program to just move forward. Team has to play hard, play well, and just get through the year.
No question, Jeff. I think it's a challenge for both the players as well as the staff. You know, when you have a transition or a change mid-year, it makes it more difficult to, you know, again, listen to a different voice at the helm. But the one thing that we have going for us is we do have Evelyn Thompson in the ranks, and she decided that she was able to step up and step into a position to lead this team for the remainder of the season. And, you know, I think that's a very good sign for this young team as well as our program.
I just want to, right off the bat, wish Michelle the best of luck in her future endeavors. You know, sometimes you go to one place, it's not the best of situations. You go to another place, you have real success. So, you know, Michelle Cherry did a real good job here at Stony Brook. Did a nice job recruiting, and we just want to wish her the best of luck.
No question. I mean, she's just the ultimate professional. She did a great job of putting together a fine basketball program, and at this point has decided to really part ways and make a transition for herself, and thought it was in the best interest of both herself and the team. And I give her credit for doing that. It's very difficult to do, and you know, we as an athletic department and certainly our young Seawolves thank her greatly for all that she's given and contributed to our program.
Evelyn Thompson takes over as the interim head coach, and does have a ton of experience, so that is something that's not a problem. She played at Auburn, which is a top level playing wise. Coached at Michigan State, coached at other top levels. So you know, Evelyn has been around the block.
She has. Don't tell her that. But yes, she absolutely has been. She's been in the coaching ranks a very long time, and we're very fortunate. Coach Cherry has had her on staff, and for the greatest thing for our young program right now is the consistency. They have their staff intact. They're certainly missing their head coach, but they're going to have the same, voices talking to them from the sideline with Coach Hardy, Coach Nix, and certainly Coach Thompson.
Well, I had an opportunity to talk to the interim head coach, Evelyn Thompson, about tonight's game, and these were her comments.
Moments before tonight's game, we're talking to the head women's basketball coach, Evelyn Thompson, and Coach, time for the team to move forward. Coach Cherry decided to step aside, and you've decided to take over for the remainder of the season. But really, it's about the players, and it's time to, you know, just get through it and move forward.
First, I'd like to say that Coach Cherry and I have been friends for quite a long time, 20 years or more. And we started off at Arizona State together, so I'd first like to thank her for bringing me here to Stony Brook and giving me the opportunity here. Secondly, that being said, I'd like to make sure that everybody knows that the reason I accepted the job, because these young women, some continuity, these young women, I believe in them, and I think we can get it done. And so here, moving forward, I think we will.
Coach, tough to always get into a transition, but it seems, going to a couple of the workouts before and just the mood that the team has made a smooth transition.
Yeah, I think anytime there's a cohesive element involved, I think that makes it transition a bit easier. And so, and plus, our young women are mature, and they understand that this is a business. And those who didn't understand it before, we certainly have explained it to them, at this point. And so, right from here on out, we're just looking forward. We're trying to get ourselves better as individuals, as a team, and just moving forward and hopefully have some success.
Coach, let's talk some basketball. Albany comes in one of the most improved teams in the conference. They've played very well. They have a new coach themselves. Talk a little bit about the Great Danes.
Well, we're expecting a really tough team tonight. They're a very aggressive team. They're a very athletic team. They're going to look to run. They're going to be in our face defensively. So, and they are a much improved team. And so we expect them to come out with a high level of intensity that we've got to match. And so, you know, it's all about execution. It's all about doing the little things and following the game plan tonight.
Coach, tough loss over against New Hampshire. Some thoughts about that game, just to conclude that.
Well, the thing that we take from New Hampshire is that, you know, it was a move in a positive direction. And so the team played very hard. I mean, we forced 29 turnovers. We out-rebounded. We did some very good things in that game. Kirsten Jeter had an opportunity to score 27 points that night and to really come back from that injury that she's had. So we were thankful for that. And also having our bench contribute as well with Danny coming in and giving us 14 points that night. So we were very excited about where we were moving. And so as long as we're moving in a positive direction and moving forward, then we're all happy.
Coach, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. I'm sure you have some goals. What are some of the things that you'll be looking for, you know, not just tonight, but, you know, you're looking for the future of the program?
Well, I told our players, the first thing I told them is that, you know, no one expects them to come in here. Certainly I don't expect them to come in here and make a drastic change overnight, because we all know that change doesn't happen overnight. But what I do expect is, you know, some effort. You can never question effort. And so that's the message that we're sending them from here to the point A to point B and beyond. And so what I expect is them to come out and give a great effort. I expect them to do the little things, and I expect them to be a team and to help each other and to make sure that we stay together and stick together through this thing.
Coach, I want to wish you the best of luck in the position in the future. We also want to wish Coach Terry the best of luck also in her future endeavors.
We certainly do. Coach Terry and I, you know, we've spoken a couple times, and I'm sure we'll be speaking a couple of times after this. But Coach Terry is a very dear friend of mine, and so I only wish her the best, and so does this team. And you know, we just have to look forward and move forward from now on.
Coach, good luck tonight.
Thank you.
That was head coach Evelyn Thompson, and Sue, looks like that the team is ready to move forward.
I think so, Jeff. You know, as we talk about players, we'll follow the leadership, and Coach Thompson and her staff will have gotten them prepared for a very tough Albany. Albany comes into the gym this evening, coming off a tough loss against BU. They were in first place prior to that game this week, this weekend against BU, and ended up losing and dropped to third. Right now in the America East Conference standings. But, you know, Albany's a much-changed team. They bring some experience back from last year, but the biggest change for them is their coach. You alluded to it at the beginning of the broadcast that they bring a brand-new staff to the lineup for Albany, and I believe you're going to see a very different style of play as they get off and running here this evening.
Yeah, their quality win is that they knocked off Hartford at Hartford, which never, you know, usually in the past never happens, and that is a sign right there that Albany's program has turned the corner.
It is, and, you know, again, they opened up the year at Hartford, and Coach Rosati probably didn't have a whole lot of opportunity to see Coach Abrams and Henderson's, you know, flow and offense and kind of what they run defensively, so that probably was a first look for Rosati and you know, the Hartford team. But nonetheless, give credit to Albany. They stepped in and found a way to win 43-46 at Hartford to start the year off and put them in position right now to be in the top bracket of the America East.
One area of concern, obviously, Sue, you played the game in a situation like this. You know, the Stony Brook team's going to try to come out and play like gangbusters. And are you worried about an over-emotion in the beginning of the game?
You know, I don't think so. I think they know that the coaches have been instilling in them since the first day that it's about a 40-minute game and that they've got to compete and they've got to find their identity on the floor, who they're going to be when the ball is going in and who they're going to be when the ball is not going in. And I think you're just going to see a continuation with this young team figuring that identity out and really fighting every possession.
Big game tonight because they have BU on Thursday and then Maine on Sunday. So I know, you know, you always say you like to take it one game at a time, but really you do have to take it one game at a time. You really can't look forward, because you got to get that first win in the league under your belt and then build on it. And, you know, each game is a huge game.
It is, but it's also very different preparations, Jeff. When you look at the schedule that we've got coming up, Albany, BU, and Maine, like you mentioned, all three teams play very different basketball. So for this staff, for this team this evening, their focus is Albany. And for the next 40 minutes, they're going to hopefully put together their game plan to not only stymie Albany's offense, but also maybe propel some of our offense or our ability to score to give us an opportunity to really compete here this evening.
Well, Kirsten Jeter had her career-high 27 points. It's just amazing that Kirsten, dealing with the leg injuries throughout the entire season, and then at New Hampshire just puts in a sort of a Hall of Fame effort with the 27 points.
It is, and that's senior leadership right there. She's going to play through it. She's going to give all that she has, whatever that is, on every single day. And I think you've heard Coach Thompson over the course of this season specifically talk about her being a warrior. And Kirsten's going to bring it. She's a competitor. She'll be a competitor to the very end. And that's what this team needs, and certainly that's what we need this evening in order to compete against a very tough Albany Great Dane team.
Well, this is the only game in the America East for the women, and we're going to send it back to the WUSB studios for about 2 minutes. Matt Mankiewicz is going to give you an update about everything going on in the world of sports. And remember, return, starting lineups, national anthem, and the start of the SUNY battle between Stony Brook and Albany. You're listening to the longtime home of Stony Brook women's basketball, WUSB.
And back in the studios of WUSB, Matt Mankiewicz here. First order of business is to see what will be going on tonight in the America East Conference. We're the only women's game going on. However, there is a men's game, and that is a big one. It's going to be Maine at Vermont, and we'll keep you up to date on it. 7:30 p.m. tip-off, still a little more than half an hour away. Other games we'll be keeping an eye on in college hoops. On the men's side, number 23, Georgetown, is at Seton Hall. And Michigan State, ranked 17th in the nation, is at number 23, Illinois. Of course, everybody knows Stony Brook played Illinois right here in the Indoor Sports Complex in their NIT game last March. About to say April. Coleman Coliseum in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Alabama hosting Kentucky, who's ranked 12th in the nation, depending on what poll you follow. Number 9, Brigham Young, hosts TCU. Would be a good football matchup. Top 25 women's college hoops. Number 17, Georgetown, is at Notre Dame. And we already have a final in the books. 23rd-ranked St. John's has beaten Cincinnati 63-34. Other stories, naturally, we'll be following all the way through. And you can follow with us by staying here at WUSB. Well, in football, defensive back Jonathan Aiken, punter Anthony DePaula have enrolled at Rutgers and will participate in the Scarlet Knights spring football practice. They have signed and they are there. The Arizona Diamondbacks have signed Stephen Drew, young shortstop, by inking him to a two-year, $13.75 million contract and a mutual option for a third year at $10 million. They also signed arbitration-eligible left-hander Joe Saunders to a one-year, $5.5 million deal. Phil Hughes and Jabba Chamberlain also avoid arbitration with the Yankees, and with the Mets, Mike Pelfrey did as well. Let's send it back to Jeff Bernstein in the Pritchard Gym.
Thanks a lot, Matt. And Sue, Matt mentioned before St. John's crushing Cincinnati. I know St. John's women had a tough blow against UConn, but Kim Barnes-Arrico, 14-5 this season, doing a real nice job with that program.
She did actually, and she does this year. It's anytime you play UConn, first of all, anybody's potentially going to get blown out. But nonetheless, she's put together a great team. I'd be curious to see the stats on that one, Jeff, to hold Cincinnati just to 39 points.
Right.
That's shocking in the Big East. So obviously she's done something right, or she's got her players playing at this point to start the season in the the Big East Conference out with a bang.
So the local St. John's doing a good job. Seawolves taking on Albany, the big rivalry between Stony Brook and Albany. Stony Brook looking to get their first win in the America East Conference. Albany comes in 3-1 in the America East, and they are one of the most, if not the most improved team in the conference. So a big win by Stony Brook here would just put them right back into the mix.
No question. This is the next 40 minutes we get to play, and we're certainly going to do that.
Let's get getting ready for the national anthem. Let's send it to the public address announcer here at Pritchard Gymnasium.
Thank you.
Stony Brook and Albany, really part two. Part one was a huge game last night between the Stony Brook men and the Albany men. Unfortunately, the Seawolves lost 52-50, and three-pointers were flying in that game. I mean, hopefully it comes over here to the Stony Brook women. They can shoot as well as those three-pointers going between the Albany men and the Stony Brook men. Looking at the starting lineups for tonight's game between Stony Brook and Albany. Let's look at the starting lineups for the Albany Great Danes. The head coach is Katie Abramson-Henderson. The assistants are Mary Grimes, Fred Castro, and Amber Meteor. 5'7 junior from Bayonne, New Jersey. Number 1, Cassandra Calloway. 5'10 sophomore from San Diego, California. Number 5, Ebony Henry. 5'4 junior from Newport News, Virginia. Number 22, Felicia Johnson. 5'7 junior from Waldorf, Maryland. Number 24, Adrian Jones. And a 6'1 junior from Gainesville, Florida. Number 33, Tabitha Macapano. For the Stony Brook Seawolves, the interim head coach is Evelyn Thompson. The assistants are Emily Hardy and Christy Nix. 6'2 sophomore from Saginaw, Michigan. Number 44, Juanita Cochran. 6'1 junior from Gwen Burnie, Maryland. Number 42, Destiny Jacobs. 5'7 sophomore from Springfield, Virginia. Number 22, Sam Landers. 5'6 junior from Teaneck, New Jersey. Number 12, Tamil Murray. And a 5'10 senior from Elmont, New York. Number 32, Kirsten Jeter. And that is the starting lineups for the Stony Brook Seawolves. Actually, Sam Landers getting the starting nod tonight. So the Seawolves and the Albany Great Danes, Jacobs, Landers, Murray, Cochran, and Jeter. And one thing that has changed right away, you can see, is that the Seawolves are going big tonight.
Well, we're just matching up, Jeff. We're going to match up pretty good in the low post with Destiny Jacobs and Juanita Cochran. They're going to start off strong against Tabitha Magapando. That's 6'1". And you've got another post player, Ebony Henry, at 5'10". Henry right now, Jeff, is leading their team in scoring at 13.4 points a game. So we're going to have our hands full in the low block area. And I'll be looking forward to Coach Evelyn Thompson's approach here to the start of this game to maybe take either Henry and or Johnson out of the rotation early, the mix early. As I look at Albany's roster, we talk a little bit about Albany. They really only play five or six deep. They don't go long into the bench. Their numbers across the board, Jeff, are pretty similar to ours in terms of their field goal percentage, their three-point average, and right now their rebounding percentage. So this is going to be a great game, a great matchup for us this evening. Like we talk a little bit about every game, you have the opportunity to go out and play 40 minutes. And right now, on paper, both teams look pretty equal.
And the key is if the bigs can stay out of foul trouble, it keeps Jeter in the natural position at the three and makes her a lot more of an asset.
It'd be great to keep her at a three, and you're right. It all comes down to making sure that you manage the fouls throughout the game.
And the tip is won by the Seawolves. They go from right to left on your radio dial. Landers foul line jump shot. Good.
I'll take that as a great first start there, Jeff. Great open look. Jeter to Landers for two.
Albany Stony Brook part two. And the Seawolves women looking to get a first America East victory. Up top for the Albany Great Danes is number 22, Felicia Johnson. Back inside is Macapando. And skip pass on the left to Henry. Henry puts the 5-foot jump shot on the left side, and the game is tied at two. Full court pressure by the Great Danes. Jacobs in the backcourt. One dribble. And she is fouled in the backcourt by Henry.
Albany's picked up on a make. It looks like they're picking up full court. Real aggressive on the entry pass, so we've got to be aware of both sides of the floor and making sure that, again, we're seeing the whole floor, not panicking on the double team that's coming to Destiny Jacobs pretty quickly.
Landers in the backcourt. As Sue mentioned, full court pressure. Jeter over to Jacobs. She can handle. Over in the right wing in the front court is Murray. Murray drives the lane. Layup is no good. Scramble for the rebound. Knocked out of bounds by Jeter, and it's Great Danes basketball.
Jeter and Cochran both had their hands on that ball. They were going in for that second opportunity, and I like that that number, Jeff, as they're crashing the glass and trying to get second chances.
2-2, 19 minutes remaining in the first half here at Pritchett. SUNY battle, Stony Brook Albany. On the right wing for the Great Danes, it's Nakapano. She loses the ball. Another steal by the Seawolves. Jeter on the left wing front court launches the three and hits. And Jeter continues the hot three-point shooting. She had four against New Hampshire.
That's Tamil Murray setting that up, Jeff. Tamil Murray had the top guard play her, which created an open lane for Jeter and a nice inner rhythm shot.
So the Seawolves have a 5-2 lead. Jeter expanding her game now with the three-point shot, something she very rarely did in her first 3 years at Stony Brook. Johnson has it up top for the Great Danes. Crossover has it at the foul line on the right wing. It's Jones. Jones' 15-footer is no good. Scramble for the rebound. Picked up by the Great Danes. Henry is fouled in the corner after she grabbed the rebound.
That was Tamil Murray. Tamil went real aggressive for that. Thought she had her hand on the rebound, but the Albany player got the rebound, and Tamil was just right there, and the official called the foul on the reach.
Junior college transfer Whitney Davis comes in from Michigan, Muskegon, Michigan. Has been a spark for the Seawolves throughout. Comes in for Destiny Jacobs. 5-2 Stony Brook, 18-14 left in the first half. Great Danes have the ball. Felicia Johnson in the front court. On the left wing, it's Callaway. Callaway is fouled. And an offensive foul called on Callaway. Good defense by the Seawolves.
I unfortunately couldn't see that as an official and Coach Thompson.
Actually, Callaway handed it off to Johnson, and Johnson got called for setting the illegal screen.
Good.
And that'll be Stony Brook basketball. Full court pressure by the Great Danes. Davis has it at midcourt. Behind the back dribble. Lobs it inside of Cochran. Back up to Jeter. Launches the three. Off the front of the rim. No good. Murray, the offensive rebound for the Seawolves. The Teaneck native gets it over on the left wing to Davis. Davis crossover dribble. She can create. Back up top to Cochran. 21 on the shot clock. Takes one step, puts up the shot, and hits!
Nice. Albany did not come out to play Juanita Cochran on that. Thought Cochran was going to reverse the ball from Tamil Murray. Took one dribble into almost a free throw, Jeff, and nailed it.
7-2 Stony Brook. 17:33 remaining in the first half. Johnson up top to Callaway. Seawolves win the tight man-to-man. Callaway in the corner to Johnson. Johnson at the foul line. Up and under move. Puts up the shot. Off the back rim. No good. Cochran with the rebound. Murray tries to reset in the backcourt for the Seawolves. Brings across the midcourt line at the 17:30 mark. 7-2 Stony Brook early on. Davis on the right wing. Up top to Cochran. Cochran lobs it into Jeter. Pounds her way in. Puts up the layup. In and out. And rebounded by Macapano.
Good high-low look by Cochran to our Kirsten Jeter. Kirsten just didn't get the roll.
Johnson on the left wing to Jones. Baseline jump shot, no good. Cochran with another rebound for the Seawolves. To Jeter. In transition is Stony Brook. Landers on the left wing in the front court. And a foul called against Stony Brook. And Jeter moved to the front court position, got called for the foul.
Actually, let me correct that, Jeff. Jeter did not get called for the foul. Number 24 for Albany got called on that foul as she pushed Jeter off the low block. The official was right there. So it'll be Stony Brook basketball on the baseline when we return.
30-second timeout, so we'll keep it here. But good coaching decision there by Evelyn Thompson having Jeter in the low post. She saw that Jeter could take advantage of the Albany bigs and drew the foul right there.
Again, that's just their transition, Jeff. When they get up and down the floor, they have a couple quick looks out of their transition set. And Kirsten was the first up the floor. So, again, Sam Landers caught the ball on the wing, looks for Jeter in the low block area, which, again, is her go-to move. When you have an undersized player playing you on the backside, especially a person like Kirsten Jeter, she needs to get the ball in the low block, and Kirsten needs to go to work, and that's exactly what she did.
Stony Brook coming in 0-4. In the America East, 3-13. Albany at 3-1, 10-7. But records in the America East on any given night are pretty much meaningless. We've seen it game by game, especially in the women and the men. So, if Stony Brook plays well tonight, they will win this game. They are talented enough to beat a good Albany team.
As we talked about, Jeff, records really mean nothing until you get to playoff time. It really means the next 40 minutes. And right now, Stony Brook's come hard out of the gates. And the officials just went back and reviewed that play. They're going to put the ball on the baseline. They initially set up that they were going to give it to Stony Brook on the wing, but decided that the call was the appropriate call, and the ball is going to be our ball out of bounds underneath the basket.
Landers on the baseline in the corner to Cochran. 16-28 remaining first half. 7-2 Stony Brook. Davis on the left wing. Davis takes the crossover dribble. Bounce pass to Landers. Landers right wing. Air-to-air pass to Murray. Gets knocked out of bounds by Tamil. And it's a turnover for Stony Brook.
Tamil just got a little low on that as Sam Landers turned the corner and drove. Tamil dropped as opposed to stepping up and creating a great passing angle. But she realized her mistake, and now she's back on defense.
And a steal by the Seawolves in the front court. Jeter to Murray. That pass a little bit too strong. Turnover for Stony Brook, and it'll be Albany basketball.
Just a little bit too much. Kirsten Jeter wanted her to cut to the rim, and it was just too far out in front of Tamil Murray.
Albany basketball in the front court is Henry. Henry drives the lane, puts up the 5-footer. Good defense by Cochran, and she grabs the rebound.
Juanita Cochran being in the right place, both feet outside the lane. Jeff stopped the penetrator and made her make a tough shot, and she missed.
So Murray up top, loses the ball, picked up by the Great Danes. Calloway in the front court. Over to Johnson. Johnson, 17-footer. Good. Nice shot there by Johnson. And Stony Brook up 7-4.
Johnson comes into the game scoring 11.2 a game, and that's her first two on the night.
Crowd getting into the game. Stony Brook up by three. Davis on the right wing. Crossover dribble and a traveling violation called against Whitney Davis. Corona and Jacobs back in for the Seawolves. Media timeout. We'll take timeout as well. 15-19 remaining in the first half. It's Stony Brook 7, Albany 4. You're listening to the longtime home of Stony Brook Athletics, WUSB.
And back in the studios of WUSB, Matt Mankiewicz here. Let's take a look at the top 25 for the women. As we said, St. John's ranked 23rd on the ESPN poll, beat Cincinnati 63-34, and 17th-ranked Georgetown is at Notre Dame. No America East action for the women tonight, other than the game you're listening to right now. Now, some of the other ones, we'll take a look at the Colonial, for example. And no games there either as well. Now, on the men's side, we do have a couple. And the top 25, Georgetown, ranked 23rd, is at Seton Hall. That's at The Rock. And Seton Hall is an 8-7 lead with 15-51.